From the Northern News Network, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana. Over 2,000 fire starts in Montana this past fire season, and more than past time for the state to modernize its 1995 drought management plan, plus a word on the effort to boost a declining greater sage-grouse population. All of that coming from our interview with Montana's director of the DNRC, Amanda Castor. But a lot of things to discuss here as we welcome our first guest, Amanda Castor, the director of the Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation. Previously had worked for Ryan Zinke, previously had been the chief of staff and senior advisor at the Bureau of Land Management, an advisor in the Office of Congressional and Legislative Affairs as well. And as we heard from her, I think it was last week at the Montana Petroleum Association convention, she lives and breathes this stuff. Good morning, Director Castor. How are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you, Tom?
I'm great. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Did appreciate catching up with you. And we'll talk maybe about, as you said, living and breathing regulatory reform at the DNRC. But let's start off with the fire update, because that kind of leads into the sage-grouse conversation, too. I dubbed it a brutal year. I don't know if it's historic in some regards, but it was certainly brutal. Resources, acres, what were the challenges our firefighters faced this year?
So at this point, we have seen 2,217 fires that have burned approximately 854,178 acres. And we have a really helpful fire dashboard at mtfireinfo.org where folks can see this information. And we're updating it as quickly as possible, and we have a great GIS map there that shows activity. But it's been a really very busy season. The DNRC, we have a really important mandate to do initial attack, and so that has continued to be our top priority despite what we have seen thus far in terms of starts. And initial reports have indicated that we have caught approximately 90% of new fire starts during initial attack. So that really speaks to how critical it is in terms of the DNRC's role in keeping these wildfires small. That not only saves the Montana taxpayer dollars, but it also helps to reduce risk to our firefighters and also prevents, you know, damages to our natural resources, our rangelands, crops, timber. So that's really been our top priority this year. I think in terms of challenges, there's been quite a bit of fire activity throughout the West. And nationally, we're at preparedness level 5. So you see different states competing for varying resources, but thankfully we have a really strong framework here in the state being able to collaborate not only within the state itself, but in terms of federal partners. And so, you know, I think all things considered, we're continuing to remain vigilant. I think that's a key message here that, you know, we had a brief reprieve in terms of conditions, but the weather is starting to begin to be hot and dry again. And so just really urging Montanans to do their part to keep initial fires from starting and just being vigilant. And we're going to continue to be there to do the job that we need to do to put out these fires as quickly as possible.
Hey, look at that number, over 2,000 fires in Montana alone, 854,000 acres. And then getting initial attack on that number of fires. Talk about how that process is completed. What goes into an initial attack? And as you mentioned, pretty successful this year, knock on wood.
And so I should say that of those fires, you know, they're broken out by who kind of oversees each of them. And so, you know, for the fires that start on state trust land, and then we do have a breakdown in terms of, you know, who, you know, depending on where you are in the state, if we go out and do that initial attack first, or if we have our excellent volunteer firefighters go out and help us do that assistance at the county level. But, you know, we're looking at, from a DNRC perspective, if it's in our jurisdiction, looking at all available resources we have, accessing systems to be able to determine what's most readily available, and then getting those resources out as immediately as possible.
Director Amanda Castor here with the Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation. How do we avoid this becoming the norm? I know we've had some dry conditions here, and I know there's a real push for forest management. How do we avoid, how do we change this trend?
That's a great question, Tom, and I'm glad you mentioned forest management. I think that's certainly a really important part of how to reduce these catastrophic wildfires moving forward, and this has been a top priority for the governor. He's laid this out very clearly in his Montana Comeback Plan, and as part of that effort, you know, the DNRC, we've taken a look back in December. We released the Montana Forest Action Plan, and that identified that we have over 9 million high-risk acres that need treatment, and of those, 4 million are the highest priority. And so if we're going to be able to make some strides here, we need to be doing this work, and we need to take that approach through a cross-boundary management plan to accomplish this landscape-scale forest restoration. And so based on that need, the governor announced this spring that the DNRC specifically, we're going to work on doubling our acres treated by the end of this calendar year. So last year we treated roughly 11,000. This year we're seeking to treat 25,000. We know that's sort of a drop in the bucket considering that we have 9 million high-risk acres, but this is something that we really want to continue to work on, especially with our federal partners, but also with private landowners, helping to empower them and do this work across ownership boundaries, because as we well know, the critical element of active management is that, you know, forest health and welfare risks do not stop at the fence line. So we all have to work together to really help reduce this excessive fuel load that's leading to these catastrophic wildfires.
I think that communication and collaboration has improved over the years. Speaking of improving, there's this Montana drought management plan that is, what is it, 20-plus years, maybe going on 30 now. You're taking a look at that and trying to improve that too, aren't you?
That's right. So yesterday the governor announced that the DNRC is going to be working to on a drought management plan. So the last time the state had a drought management plan that was approved was back in 1995. So the governor noted that every region in Montana is facing severe and extreme drought. So this is really the time for us to plan for the future and to prepare, actually have an increase in our preparedness, because we know drought is having an impact on everyone, whether you're talking about visitors to the state, foresters, and our agricultural producers. So we're working on, this will be a two-year process to update this plan to help increase our preparedness to meet the current and future drought-related challenges across a whole range of water users in the state.
What does a drought management plan do for us, and what will an improved drought management plan do for us?
So it'll allow us to focus on preparedness, monitoring, and response, and really put us in a proactive position. I think part of a key step is being able to identify and prioritize the vulnerabilities that we do have, but then also provide recommendations for proactive strategies to reduce the severity and lessen impacts. And so it's going to be, I think it's a really excellent both current resource but also forward-looking opportunity to see what we can be doing in this space to really help our communities and our individual users across the state of Montana.
Director Amanda Castor for the Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation. A lot of experience working on these issues, energy and natural resources. Recently served as the acting Deputy Assistant Secretary for Land and Minerals Management at the U.S. Department of Interior. Let's move on from this. I know it's all related. When we look at grouse, you guys have a webinar upcoming here on September 16th that the public can view. I want to go into that too, but take us back to like 2015 when the Obama administration elected not to list the greater sage grouse as an endangered species. And I have appreciated that because there was a lot of collaboration going into a plan to avoid that listing. Let's talk about the sage grouse and where we're at right now.
Sure. So I think that was a great recap of what we saw in 2015. And at that time, the Bureau of Land Management finalized their land use plans that help dictate land management and sage-grouse habitat across their ownership. So during the Trump administration, they gave states an opportunity to make changes to those sage-grouse plans. And since the change in administration, what we're seeing is kind of a multi-prong approach. And we're certainly keeping an eye on this as it plays out at the national level. But because of court rulings on those 2018, 2019 plans, the 2015 plans are back in effect. And so the BLM recently announced, actually in almost about a month ago now, that as part of those 2015 plans, a mineral withdrawal had been identified as a priority. That had gone away. Now the BLM is reinitiating environmental analysis on that mineral withdrawal. And so they're doing an environmental impact statement to assess if they're going to proceed with that or not. And in addition to that, the BLM has indicated that they're taking another look at these 2015 land use plans And so we're hoping to understand more, what does that process look like, given, as you noted, it was a collaborative process, bringing forward states and different entities to work on this issue. And so from a state perspective, like I noted, we're going to be keeping a really close eye on that. At the same time, from a state perspective, you know, we've had this program since 2015, and I think a key component is helping to make some of the more confusing elements and some of the elements that I would say potentially lack some transparency, helping the public be able to understand what the program is doing and how those inner workings operate, which is why that webinar is so important. It's a first step of many we're going to be offering, where people can join us. The Montana Sagegrass Oversight Team is hosting this, and we're going to be able to start show the public from beginning to end how this habitat quantification tool works, and also, you know, give them an opportunity to ask questions and really engage in a dialogue about the state's program and how we have been managing sagegrass as it relates to this specific tool.
We only have just about a minute and a half left here. What's the update on the sagegrass? I know over the past few years, it's been hampered by a lot of things, fire being one of them, but how's the population doing now?
So the last report that I received, and actually that was given to the Montana Sagegrass Oversight Team by FWP, was that in 2020 we saw an uptick in the population. Now, I think the way that this has been seen previously, they kind of tie all states together, but it's important to note that Montana has seen some improvements in its population, and we need to take a look to see what this year looks like, but I'd say that, you know, we've been working really hard on this.
I read a recent report that Wyoming has seen a decrease in population. I know, again, there's a lot of factors that go into protecting the sage grouse. I don't have enough time to get into regulatory reform. I know that's a big focus of this administration and also the Montana Department of Natural Resources and Conservation. So we'd love to have you back on, Director Castor, to go into that in more detail.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to do that, Tom.
I appreciate that. Take care, okay? And tell everyone hi up there for me, all right?
Thank you. Will do.
Amanda Castor, Montana Director of the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation, catching up with Troy Downing.